Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. A beautiful day. Every Sunday that you're here with Homegrown and Sunday Morning Wake Up Call makes for a beautiful day. Emily Warren here with us from Region 10, Director of Prevention, as we talk about an important topic, suicide prevention. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're always glad when we can do this sort of conversation important to the topic.
Absolutely.
Important to the community. Emily is Region 10's Director of Prevention, also the Chair of Suicide Prevention Awareness Resource Council, SPARC.
SPARC, yes.
We'll do that name several times throughout the hour. We reached out to you back in June to do this program. And you and I were talking out before the hour, you know, when it's an important topic, people don't often have conversation about it before they should.
Mm-hmm.
It often comes up, I don't want to say too late, but never sort of during the down moment, sort of like the waves, right? Up and down, up and down. We reached out to you after the celebrity deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Or deaths of celebrities might be a better phrasing, of Anthony Bourdain, the restaurateur, and Kate Spade. And so now here you are. And so we'll talk about the media, and we'll get into some statistics. But I want to talk about the media presentation for a bit. So why here, why now, and where were you back in June when those suicide deaths took place?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes we don't get the opportunity to talk about suicide until we experience a tragedy so publicly, like the deaths of Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade. And the way media talks about those deaths can be really impactful. There's a lot of research that goes into messaging around suicide and the way that both on radio shows, TV, and newspapers, how suicide deaths are covered, the language that's used, all can have a really big impact on survivors of suicide and people who are at risk. So there's both good and bad. I think that when these deaths happen, like this show, we have the opportunity to spread a message of hope and recovery and share resources that could be really helpful to people. However, there's also a downside with sort of sensationalized media coverage and things like showing too many details, blaming the death on one specific incident. The coverage, I think especially of Kate Spade's death, there are some news organizations that put details out there about a note that she left behind, and that message can be really dangerous for people who are at risk. Research shows that if we report suicides in a way that shows a clear method, including pictures, that we actually see an increase of suicides by that method afterwards.
Again, we are talking about suicide prevention today with Emily Warren, Director of Prevention from Region 10. And you're going to have to go through the hour. I'm going to do the don'ts throughout the hour, and I ask you to use me as the example of the media do's and don'ts. So please, I'm I'm open to that. I'm not doing it intentionally. It's just going to be my, just what comes out of my mouth and comes through my, you know, comes from the brain all too quickly. But I'd like to go through some of the do's and don'ts, because I'm sure it's not just the media. It's how the neighbor speaks to the neighbor, or the coworkers talk, not knowing who you may be speaking to.
Yeah.
Because this conversation isn't something that takes place freely, correct?
Yeah.
If someone in your family, if your sibling has attempted or completed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't completed a better word?
Yes.
Didn't I read that?
Yeah.
So chat about that for a moment.
Yeah, the language around, it's both mental health and suicide. There's such a stigma around both. And you're right, we're not taught how to have this conversation. So we do take our cues from what we see in the media, on TV and movies. And sometimes that's a dangerous message. So when we're talking language, you're right, the preferred vernacular is completed suicide. We don't like suicide, which is what we hear most frequently, because people commit crimes. That's the connotation that that has. So we find that sort of stigmatizing. So we'd say die by suicide or completed suicide. We also sometimes hear successful or unsuccessful attempt. We try to move away from that language because we don't want suicide to ever be considered a success. And when we're talking about mental health disorders, we try to use what's called person-centered language. And that's really putting the person first. So instead of saying that person is bipolar, we would say that person has bipolar disorder, because their mental health disorder doesn't necessarily define them. You know, people with major depressive disorder, about half of them only experience one episode in their lifetime. So it's really not necessarily a lifelong disorder for them. And you can think about it in comparing it to physical health disorders too. Like, we wouldn't say that cancer kid, but we do say that ADHD kid, and that's just not okay. We don't want to define people by their disorders. There's so much more than that, and it's not really spreading that message of hope and recovery.
So what are some of the do's and don'ts? I mean, there's more to it than just saying completed mm-hmm. and versus successful. When you, with Anthony Bourdain, yeah. How would you say that the Anthony Bourdain suicide was news presented differently from Kate Spade, or were they similar?
You know, in some ways they are similar. There are a lot of news organizations that have really taken a look at the guidelines and recommendations for reporting on suicide, including locally in our area. We had a number of news partners attend a training with us last month about the best ways to cover suicides. But any time that there's a suicide, we often see sensationalized headlines that describe the method, that clearly state suicide in the headline, whereas we would prefer, you know, Kurt Cobain dead at 27 is a better headline than Kurt Cobain used this method to commit suicide, which is what we would see a lot of. And it same goes for Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, that there were some sensationalized headlines using photos or videos of the location that the suicide took place, of pictures of grieving family or friends. All of that's very sensationalized. Using terms like suicide epidemic or skyrocketing, you know, the trends have shown that suicide rates are increasing, but we don't want to overstate that too much. Also, describing suicides as happening without warning can be really dangerous. Most, but not all, people exhibit some signs that they're thinking about suicide before they attempt or die by suicide. So, making sure that when articles are covering suicide, they're including things like warning signs or things to look out for and helpful phone numbers to call.
Well, let's. So there's two parts to that that I want to do. Let's mention a helpful phone number to call.
Yeah. Sure. There's a couple helpful phone numbers to call. So locally, if you know someone that's at risk right now, or you yourself are struggling, Region 10 has an emergency services phone number that's 24/7. That number is 434-972-1800.
Let me write that down, and sure. I'll do that. So
434-972-1800.
And that's a 24-hour helpline.
Yep, that's our Region 10 emergency services.
Okay.
And they're available to help talk through if someone's having thoughts or really just struggling with their mental health and they're not sure where to go next. If you're a parent worried about your child, they're available to talk and connect. Another popular number that we give out is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and that is 1-800-273-8255.
273-8255.
Spells out talk if you have an old school phone and you can.
And that's the national line.
That is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
So we'll mention those throughout the hour as well.
Another important one that I'd like to mention, especially for adolescents, is there's now a crisis text line, because we've found that many young people are not comfortable having this conversation on the phone with someone, but they would feel more comfortable texting. So the crisis text line is 741-741, and you can text help, start, anything to get the conversation started with a counselor on the other end, who can help talk you through your crisis and connect to other resources. Okay. And that is, again, not just for suicide. The crisis text line is for any struggle that a child may be having, an adult.
So we'll mention those throughout the hour.
Of course.
The other thing that you mentioned as a don't for the media is to not mention that suicide rates are increasing. But they are increasing, and I feel that that's important for us to talk about in the hour for people who are listening, whether they are, especially for, not maybe not for the person who is having those thoughts or considerations, but for people who are, that we want to be paying attention or just interested enough in the in our conversation to keep listening through the hour for other things that they may find out through the hour, is the rates have increased in nearly every state since 2000.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, I'll say you actually stated it perfectly, which is that rates are on the rise and they're increasing. What we want to avoid is the sort of sensationalist headlines like there's an epidemic or they're skyrocketing. So the rates have increased to about 45,000 people per year in the United States. That comes out to one death every 12 minutes. So it's certainly impacting a lot of people. But we also like to look at that number as the tip of an iceberg, really. Those represent the reported suicide deaths. We know that there are some deaths that go unreported as suicides, whether that be things like overdoses, car accidents, that could really be suicides, but they're not reported as such because there wasn't a clear history or statement made before the death. So the number could actually be even bigger than that. And beyond that, we want to recognize that, you know, of the 45,000 people that die by suicide every year, we have many, many more people who have these thoughts of suicide. And that's really what we want to talk about, is how do we engage those people? So 45,000 people die by suicide every year, a little over a million attempt suicide every year, but almost 10 million have seriously thought about suicide in the United States. That's a huge number. And it's really an opportunity for us to be having conversations with our family, friends, neighbors, coworkers, because it is common and it's just so stigmatized that we don't feel comfortable talking to our friends about it, asking the question if they're thinking about suicide. And we might not know what help is available for someone who's feeling suicidal.
15 minutes after the hour with our guest today, Emily Warren. She's from Region 10, the Director of Prevention. Emily, we were also other numbers to not get deep in the weeds here, but the National Suicide Crisis Helpline, that's the number, the phone number you gave, the 1-800-273-TALK, right?
Yeah.
The National Suicide Crisis Helpline has seen their number of calls double just in the last 3 years to 2 million per year.
Yeah. You know, I choose to look at that as a positive thing, that more people are reaching out for help. And I think it's also an example of us using the media well. I think a lot more of our media partners are including that number at the end of their articles about suicide deaths. And even in pop culture, you know, there's a hip-hop artist named Logic who released a song that's about his personal suicide struggles, and it includes the phone number as the title of the song. And when he performed, I believe he performed that song at the Grammys, they saw a spike in calls after that. And I think that's a wonderful opportunity to encourage people to reach out and say there are a lot of people who are reaching out and have found this resource really helpful.
And we'll give these numbers again throughout the hour, and we'll put them in the text for the podcast. You can call up our number for the show if you have a question or something that you'd like to bring into the show today with Emily Warren from Region 10. Phone number into the studio is 434-284-9470. That's 434-284-9470. That'll bring you into the studio with Emily Warren here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Emily, so as we just a few of those numbers get tossed out there, and realize that these are numbers for the United States, right? But is the rise in numbers, we talk about one completed suicide every 12 minutes. Is this a cultural or a global issue in general?
Suicide affects people across the globe. So the World Health Organization estimates that about 800,000 people take their own lives worldwide every year. How suicides are reported in other countries may be a little different than in ours. So our numbers could look higher than other countries when actually they could be pretty similar. But it definitely is a worldwide phenomenon. And I'm not sure worldwide if they're seeing the same increase that we're seeing in the United States. However, other countries such as Australia, people in Europe, we are seeing pretty similar strategies in our things like trainings and activities that try to combat this rise in completed suicide deaths.
Does it seem to be an issue related to one socioeconomic stratus?
Actually, no. So suicide deaths can affect anyone. So it can affect any race, nationality, religion, and socioeconomic status. There are some places that we see differences. People who, especially youth who are LGBTQ, we see higher rates. We see some gender differences as well that we can talk a little more about. And then there are some rates of people who are more likely to attempt. And all of those are true in Virginia and across the U.S.
Again, our guest today, Emily Warren, Director of Prevention at Region 10. You can call into the studio at 434-284-9470. If you're just sitting at home listening, and feel like you need to take advantage of some of the other numbers that are given out today, don't forget you can use the crisis text line. That's 741-741, and you can just text HELP or something similar. We'll be right back. And back here today on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, talking about a topic that doesn't often get discussed, suicide prevention. Emily Warren here in the studio from Region 10 and SPARC, Suicide Prevention Awareness Resource Council. Emily, before the break, you were talking about different groups that do have somewhat different, I guess, percentages, somewhat different rates. You mentioned gender, LGBTQ, et cetera. Talk about that for a minute.
Sure. So when we're talking about gender, we do see some clear differences in completed suicides. Men are much more likely to complete suicide than women at a rate of about four times as many. However, women are more likely to attempt more than men. And that comes down to their means of suicide. Men tend to choose more lethal means. Firearm deaths account for over half of completed suicides in the United States. So about 23,000 of that 45,000 are firearm deaths. And we find that method is much more common in males than in females. And that also can speak to the willingness to reach out about suicide and mental health struggles in general. It's a little more socially acceptable for women to say, I'm struggling right now and I need help. And sometimes the message that we give men is that, you know, you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and be a man, you got this. And that can be a really dangerous message for someone who's struggling. Because men can be just as affected by depression, by any of our serious mental health disorders as women. So making sure that we spread a message of hope to men as well and that help is available for them, it can be a challenge.
Is there an, excuse me, is there an age discrepancy or difference, or does it, I mean, and I'm assuming here, I'll go below and leave out below teenage. But once you get to be a teenager, does it keep an even pace all the way through life?
No, we see probably our biggest spike around middle age. Middle age men are our highest highest percentage of completed suicides. But you can sort of track the trends around suicide with these big phase of life changes. So when kids get into high school, that can be a really stressful time. When they're getting into college or leaving the house and having their first job, that can, we can see a little spike there. You know, the middle age time, maybe that's, we're seeing some divorces and kids leaving the home. And then with older adults, we see another little bump with, you know, there could be a lot more health issues. There could be spouses or friends and family passing away and feeling a little isolated. But anytime there's those stressful periods in life, we can see a little spike in the suicide numbers. But our data clearly shows, and this is true locally in Virginia and nationwide, that middle-aged men are the most at risk.
But we often seem to talk about teenagers.
Yes.
I mean, that's, other than celebrities, there was a Netflix show that came out. That seems to be those are the books. Those are the movies. That's where the fascination. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely spot on.
Not exaggerating?
No, you're spot on. And we do see a bump around the teenage years. That is a really stressful time. That being said, teenagers are incredibly resilient. You know, most people struggle some in their teenage years, but make it to adulthood okay. And we have a lot of resources available for that age range that we don't necessarily have as much for adults.
Including that crisis text line of 741-741.
Yeah, but, you know, you mentioned TV shows like the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why can also be really damaging. You know, I know the intention behind that show is to start the conversation around suicide and encourage more open discussion. But really, they show really graphic scenes of assaults, of an actual suicide death, which can be really damaging for people who are at risk of suicide. So we know that you can't tell kids not to watch something, because that will just make sure they all watch it. But we do encourage parents that if they know that their child is watching this show, to have a conversation with them and just make sure they know that you're available to talk, and that you have concerns, and that if your child might feel like something in the show is speaking to them, that there's help available and that you will help them talk to a school counselor or another mental health professional to get them the help that they need.
What is the get away from the some of the more basic parts of the conversation a little bit? I feel like we're sort of walking down the standard path here. What does a parent do? I'm not a parent. I've become a stepdad. But after someone had already, you know, finished high school and but, you know, if you're a parent and you're, I mean, it seems like the stereotype is that your child would say, "Sure, Dad, got it." You know, thumbs up, I'll let you know. And the child doesn't want to talk to the parent. It's already an uncomfortable conversation, already an uncomfortable topic. Probably don't want to talk to the school counselor. How do you get them at a comfortable place with an, with a comfortable person to talk to, where you can say, "Here's the platter that I'm put in front of you. Now I'm turning away, and you pick the one that you want when you want it."
Oh gosh, so there's a couple things that I'd want to talk about there. One, I think there are things parents can do sort of earlier on to talk about feelings with their kids. If you can model for your child that it's normal and okay to talk about when you're struggling, it makes it more likely that your child will come to you when they're struggling and have that conversation. Now, it may be true that not every child is comfortable talking with their school counselors. We are really lucky in our area that we have some wonderful school counselors. But there's also other staff at the school. If they feel connected with a teacher or anyone, a coach, a youth group leader,
usually have a favorite.
Any safe adult in their life, we want to encourage kids to reach out to. I'll say one that we often tell parents, especially if they're feeling uncomfortable with this conversation. If you notice that something seems off with your child, and really kids, I mean, parents know their kids best, right? And they should trust their gut instincts. So if something seems wrong, they seem like they're struggling a lot more lately. I know adolescence is tough, but this seems to be a little bit more than that. Starting with their pediatrician is a great place to go. That might be a doctor that has a relationship with your child, that has known them over a good amount of time, and that your child also trusts. So starting that conversation of, you know, "I've noticed things have been off lately. I'd like to take you for a checkup with your doctor and see if we can figure out what's going on." Because it's possible that there's a physical problem going on that's affecting mental health. But also doctors are able to say, "We notice that, you know, you seem to be feeling a little more anxious lately. Let's talk about maybe getting you into some counseling." And they can make that referral, which might be a little more palatable for kids than coming from their parents.
30 minutes after the hour here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. You're welcome to call in to the show today. about suicide prevention and speak with Emily Warren. She's Director of Prevention at Region 10. Our phone number, 434-284-9470. That gets you into the studio. If you want to take advantage and write a number down for yourself, for somebody else in the family or your friendship circle, the National Suicide
Prevention
Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. But again, for Emily here in the studio, it's 284-9470. What are some of the common myths about suicide?
Oh gosh, there are so many. One of the more common ones that we hear is that if someone is talking about suicide, then they must not be serious. And that's just not the case. I think we tend to think that if someone is thinking about suicide, then if they're really serious about it, they wouldn't be mentioning it to anyone. But study shows that people who die by suicide have reached out and talked to someone about it in the time before their death. So every time someone mentions suicide, we want to take it seriously. And that kind of goes along with the myth that people who attempt suicide just want attention. And I think attention seeking can have a really negative connotation. When we talk about suicidal behaviors, non-suicidal self-injury like cutting, sometimes people refer to that as, oh, they're just looking for attention. I like to reframe it into their attention needing. Possibly they need attention and we should give it to them and get them the help that that they're asking for, and they might not have another way to communicate their pain. And this is the only way they know how to reach out and get a reaction from people. So we got to get them into the help so they can better process their feelings. Another common misconception is asking about suicide might put the idea in someone's head. And that's also not true. There is a lot of difficulty with asking the question. You know, there are entire trainings dedicated to how to ask the question if someone's thinking about suicide, because people are naturally scared to hear someone's answer. We don't want to hear that our close friends, family, neighbors are thinking about suicide. So we might say, you're not thinking of doing anything crazy, are you? Or you're not thinking of hurting yourself. And those are really different questions than, are you thinking about suicide or are you thinking about killing yourself? So we really encourage that people ask directly and as calmly and confidently as they can, even though they might not be feeling that inside. I think especially when we're talking parents talking to their kids, they're going to be naturally nervous. They don't want their baby to be suffering. But we definitely encourage asking that question directly. There's some other myths, like suicide happens without warning. Again, there are, of course, some scenarios where people really don't see any warning signs. But we found that most suicides occur when there have been some clues that the person has been struggling leading up to that. It might not be verbal clues, but it's one of those things that we're not trained as friends or family to look for these suicidal behaviors or thoughts in our peers. So making sure that we're well educated on what do I need to be looking out for is really important.
Well, there's the myth about what they go and they start wearing all black.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think there are some stereotypes of the people who might be suffering with mental health disorders or suicidal thoughts of these real dark outfits, kind of that goth
right.
feel. And that's really not the case. Depression can affect anyone, you know, any stereotype you can think of, from a cheerleader to a band member to someone on the chess club. Like, really anyone can be affected by thoughts of suicide. So we don't want to, there's a danger in just looking for certain cues from people. Really sensing some isolation and disconnectedness from people is a big one. Feelings of hopelessness, helplessness, feeling like they're a burden to others is a really common one that we hear. And that can go into the difficulty that people have reaching out for help. If they feel like a burden to others, they don't want to, you know, put their feelings on others because they think it will stress them out too, and they don't want to do that. But really, as friends and family, we want to say, I would rather know and help you than for you to be suffering alone.
Emily Warren here with us. She's the chair of SPARC. That's the Suicide Prevention Awareness Resource Council. Emily, you were talking about people having thoughts of suicide. Mm-hmm. And I have a close friend whose son went and started having thoughts of suicide. And what you gave me the proper phrase of that?
Suicidal ideation.
Suicidal ideation. And mm-hmm. so then started having therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But you gave me a number, a statistic to go with that.
Yeah.
Millions of people.
Yeah. Over, you know, close to or over 10 million people in the United States, they believe, have these thoughts of suicide every year. So a lot of people are feeling this. That's a huge number. And I'm so glad to hear that he got into therapy and is doing better, because I think that's just as important of is sharing the message that help is available and recovery is possible, and you don't have to feel this way forever. Things can be different.
But if 10 million people having suicidal thoughts, mm-hmm. how many of those actually do anything about it?
So the CDC reports that about 1.3 million make attempts. Have suicidal behaviors is what we'd call that. And of those, 45,000 is our new number of completed suicides per year.
Again, Emily Warren here from Region 10. I want to get into what signs to look for friends and family and children, because, as you mentioned, the sort of the spike comes at age 45, mm-hmm. or I said 45,
middle age.
So that number popped into my head. But certainly at that age, plenty of people have children, so the mm-hmm. children can help. SPARC, mm-hmm. I want to talk about SPARC for a few minutes. And we have an upcoming break, so this seems like this is a good item that we can start and stop with.
Yeah.
So SPARC is a local organization that does what for us?
We raise awareness around suicide in our community and provide resources locally. And that can look like trainings. We help support a number of trainings because, as I've mentioned, people aren't trained to talk to their friends or family about suicide. And it can be really difficult to have this conversation. So there are trainings like mental health first aid, one called Assist, one called Safe Talk, that are really helpful in training people how to recognize the signs of suicide and be able to approach their loved ones that they're concerned about and have that conversation. We also plan a number of events that I can talk more about.
And your biggest one?
Our biggest one is called the Spark of Hope Walk, and it happens in October. It'll be October 20th this year at a beautiful farm out in Louisa. We have a speaker come in who tells their story of recovery and what helped them through their struggles. And it is a family-friendly event. So we have a bunch of activities going on, music. We do a 5K run and a fun walk. And we provide a number of resources of just what's available in our area. And we have a great turnout every year. Over 300 people come, and we raise some money for our local suicide prevention efforts.
Do you have a date yet?
Yes, October 20th.
October 20th.
And that will be on our sparkhope.org website.
All right. So we'll be back in just a second with Emily Warren. back here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, talking about suicide prevention with Emily Warren from Region 10 and Spark.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So, Spark, you've got the Spark of Hope
Walk.
Yep. Coming up on October 20th.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else planned in the second half of the year?
You know, we do have this new opportunity to show a movie called The Ripple Effect. We actually showed it at the Paramount Theater back in May. And it's the story of Kevin Hines, who's a man who survived his suicide attempt by jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. So he has a really powerful story. And it sort of shows the ripple effect of his attempt and his work in the recovery field. And we now own the rights to that film, so we can show it in partnership with other organizations in the area. We're in talks with local colleges and such to show it to some of their students. So if people are interested in showing The Ripple Effect, it's a really powerful and just moving film and is a great way to start the conversation around suicide. People are welcome to check out our sparkhope.org website for information on how to reach out about that resource.
So, conversation. For some people, I would think, mm-hmm. simpler to have than with others.
Absolutely.
So, when you want to have a local conversation and someone wants to show the film mm-hmm. because their organization is prepared to have this conversation,
yeah.
How, can you do this in schools? How do you... First of all, can you do this in a local public school?
The Ripple Effect, I believe they say the rating, if it was rated like the regular movies, it would be PG-13. So as long as the children are old enough, we would be able to show it to those ages. We'd be happy to show it in, for any group, including local schools. We do think that there are some things that should be in place in order to show this film, including having mental health support available, because it might bring stuff up for people who maybe weren't expecting to have an emotional reaction, but once they see the content of the film, it really is moving, and he has an incredible story, Kevin Hines. So making sure we have appropriate resources available for people, and you know, especially youth who feel feelings extra strong in adolescence, we would might want to make sure that we have enough mental health support available to make sure the viewing is as safe as possible.
Does Region 10 or any organizations that you're part of do any suicide prevention conversation in our local schools?
Absolutely. We have a great partnership with both the city schools and Albemarle County schools, as well as our surrounding county. It's really, but for instance, last year with our Spark of Hope Walk, we had a number of teams of like fundraising teams of kids who registered together to try to raise the most money. And they would come out and do the run, the 5K run or do the walk as a group, make T-shirts, help volunteer. So we really have a lot of young people who are interested in our events. We also had in the past year a young woman, I believe she was in eighth grade at Henley Middle School, planned an event for us at the Southern on the downtown mall, a concert that included local bands, including some high school bands, to raise money for Spark and awareness around suicide. And it was wonderful. It, you know, I think we're pretty lucky right now that we have a group of youth in this area who are very motivated and involved in the mental health awareness and reducing the stigma around suicide. So we hope to capitalize on that and increase those partnerships for this coming year and plan some more events with them, because kids are sort of our best advocates with their peers.
Do you get to go into the schools and do anything?
Absolutely. So we actually have, Region 10 has prevention staff in each of the high schools and two of the middle schools for next year, who are there full time to help kids with any sort of struggle that they're having, whether it be anxiety, depression, a little bullying, just stress about school. It can be really overwhelming, but also around crises like suicide. That program is called the Student Assistance Program. So we encourage parents, if they're interested in that, to call their school counselors and get more information. But they also try to plan these school-wide awareness events with kids. So we also try to partner with our great community partners. So for instance, in February, it's usually Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. So we'll partner with the Shelter for Help and Emergency to do some activities in the school around that. But September is actually National Suicide Prevention Month. So I imagine that once school gets back in session, we'll start planning some activities with our student leaders for their peers.
How do parents feel about having a conversation, their kids having a conversation at school about suicide?
I think parents we've found have been pretty supportive. For instance, with that concert that we had, a lot of kids came with their parents, and we are so excited to see that, because what an awesome opportunity to start a conversation between parents and kids. But parents overall seem to be very supportive of us doing these suicide prevention events in schools that can help raise awareness to their kids and make sure that they know these resources are available. And I think that we've had more and more parents reach out for resources around having this conversation about suicide, whether that be trainings on how to have that conversation, or we have some other things that we can give away through another local initiative called Lock and Talk Virginia. If a child's at risk, or if anyone's at risk, we can give out things such as medication lock boxes or trigger locks for firearms for free through Region 10 for anyone who might be at risk of suicide. So we've had a lot of conversations with parents about safely locking up means to suicide. There's a lot of research that shows if you put a little time and distance between someone and their method of suicide, such as a firearm, if we put a trigger lock on there, it can really help prevent a death, because making it even a little more difficult for someone to find their means can save a life.
And that's lockandtalk.org.
Yep, lockandtalk.org. It's our local initiative. They support those trainings that I mentioned, and they give out these methods of means, lethal means reduction, to try to help folks at risk. But another thing they do is they partner with local gun retailers, whether that's pawn shops or gun shops, anything, to provide some safe suicide messaging for the staff that work there, to be on the lookout for signs of suicide with their customers. That's an incredible partnership that we've been able to make in our area. We've been able to partner with our local crisis intervention team, CIT. They're police officers who receive extra training in mental health. They were able to help us out by going to all of the gun retailers in our area to talk about suicide with people who sell guns to people who might be at risk. And that's wonderful. You know, with over 50% of the completed suicides in the U.S. being by a firearm, I think it's really important to spread that message of safety. And we found that a common theme in gun culture is wanting to protect your family and your home, and being safe from suicide is part of that safety. So capitalizing on that feeling and making sure we have resources available for people who might have weapons in their home is really important to us.
Emily Warren here with us today on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call as we talk about suicide prevention. Ms. Warren from Region 10, where she's the Director of Prevention. I don't want to forget to give out Region 10's helpline. If you want to use that at some point later on in your life, that's 434-972-1800. Mm-hmm. And you can use that for help for a variety of topics, not just suicide prevention. That's 972-1800. It's a 24-hour helpline. So, Emily, one of the things that we talk about how easily the media wants to talk about this topic, but how difficult it can be for many parents to want to talk about it. Somebody else can initiate the conversation, but not always themselves. Am I right to think that it's a lot like some other difficult topics? We can talk about bullying in just a minute, but that's not my child. My kid isn't a bully. My kid doesn't smoke pot. My kid, anything that has a negative connotation, my child wouldn't commit, attempt suicide. And so the conversation doesn't take place or takes place with a weak attempt. And so what do you say to help the parent have a more strong and stable start to the conversation, understanding that it's important?
Well, I think acknowledging parents' fear around their child struggling with any of those issues that you mentioned, you know, it's not just sort of a distaste for those issues. It's really parents love their kids and don't want them to be struggling in any way. So finding out that your kid is struggling with suicidal thoughts or bullying or any of those things can feel overwhelming to them. So the more resources we can give parents, the better. I think encouraging them to, you know, I think being honest with their child is really important, of saying, like, I'm not sure exactly the right things to say here. And, you know, I'm not a mental health professional, so I don't know all of the things that we can do to help. But I do know that we can call this number and they can give us some ideas. Even just sort of that level of honesty can be helpful. But again, you know, making sure that their kids know that they love them and that they want to help them, whatever that might be. You know, again, you mentioned earlier, rightly so, that not every child is going to be comfortable talking to their parent about their feelings. But if their parent was able to say, I know you might not want to talk to me, but I'd really like to connect you with this counselor that I know of, or I'd love to take you to your pediatrician and maybe we can start the conversation there and see what they think. That might be an easier transition for a kid getting into some help. And a doctor or a counselor or even school counselors can help parents have those conversations with their kids if the parent's not feeling confident on doing it on their own.
How does it go the other direction? How does it work for an adult child to help an older person? Because suicidal attempts and completions take place, you said, for middle age, but certainly takes place for an elderly age.
Absolutely.
And how do you handle that?
That can be just as hard of a conversation, having that with your parent, potentially. Same way parents don't want their kids to be struggling, kids don't want their parents to be struggling.
Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade were both
parents.
How old?
Younger, I think. Under 18, their kids. But it can be really difficult. I think both of them were middle-aged when they passed. But, you know, there's an entire training that's dedicated to how to have the conversation with people, because we recognize it is really hard and can feel very uncomfortable if it's someone that you don't know very well, or even more if it's someone you do know really well and you realize they've been struggling with this thing and you haven't known about it for potentially years. You know, again, I think if we start from a place of, I love you and I've noticed these things about you lately and I'm concerned enough that I feel I need to ask, are you thinking about suicide? And when they say yes, if they do say yes, making sure they know, thank you for telling me and I want to help connect you with with some resources who can help you. And it's possible that they'll say no, and you might still have that feeling in your stomach of, oh man, they said no, but I really think that they mean yes. And continuing to have that conversation with them and asking again, asking in a different way, and just being available of, like, you are a safe person to have this conversation with, saying, you know, you're saying that right now, but if things change, I want you to know I'm available. And I have these phone numbers that you're giving out that could be really helpful in having this conversation further if you're not comfortable talking to me.
Just a few minutes left. And I just mentioned the word bullying.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly could spend an hour talking about bullying, and we have on this program.
Yeah.
Talked about bullying in the past. But can you talk about its role in suicidal attempts?
Yeah, I think when we're talking with young people, just those negative outcomes of bullying, like depression and anxiety, and feeling disconnected, can put someone more at risk for increased suicide-related behavior. But I wanted to highlight sort of these other two groups that are connected to bullying. So youth who report both bullying others and being bullied have the highest risk for suicide-related behavior of any of the groups that report bullying. So it's really important when we're talking about kids who seem to be bullying others, that we reach out and connect them with support as well, because they may be really struggling internally. There's another bit of research that shows that youth who have observed but not participated in bullying, so who have just witnessed it happening in their schools to their friends or peers, they can report significantly more feelings of helplessness and feeling disconnected and unsupported from responsible adults in the school than youth who haven't witnessed bullying behavior. So that's another group. Those bystanders can feel really hopeless. And hopeless is kind of one of the main feelings that we hear about as a warning sign to suicide. So making sure that we have resources available for bullying in schools is huge.
Has, I'll start with Region 10, but has the efforts to assist these folks that we're talking about been harmed through financial loss and financial support from government assistance?
You know, we're pretty lucky with our local initiatives that we've been able to support our suicide prevention initiatives, like training, providing lockboxes, and all of that free of charge to many people in the community. So we haven't necessarily, in the suicide prevention field, felt the difference. But overall, getting people into mental health services, I think, is really dependent also on making sure that they have access to healthcare and mental health. So certainly those can be affected by government.
But when you say that, and we have like 30 seconds left here, every time we talk about suicide, we bring up mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that a stigma that people who are concerned about their suicidal thoughts, they don't want to be stigmatized?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's going to be an ongoing conversation to reduce that stigma. Not everyone who dies by suicide has a mental health disorder. That's one of the things the CDC recently came out with, and that was a surprise to people. But we do know that people with mental health disorders are more likely to struggle with suicidal thoughts.
Emily Warren here from Region 10. She's the Director of Prevention as we finish up our conversation on suicide prevention. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Don't forget that crisis text line 741-741, the national line for suicidal assistance. It's not its official name. 1-800-273-8255. Thanks so much. Next week, Dr. Pam Moran returns, former Albemarle County Superintendent, talk about her new job helping grades K through 12 around the state.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.